Welcome to the Grow Your Practice podcast. Hi, I'm your host, Chad Madden, owner of Madden Physical Therapy and Breakthrough. Join me each week as we dive into the best practices, systems, principles, tips, and tricks to help you grow your private practice. This week, I wanted to share with you a recording from a recent webinar that I hosted. Remember, this was a training hosted with a live audience, so there are real-time questions and answers that I think you will find valuable. Without further ado, let's get started.
Very recently, we completed a national survey of private practice owners, and there were three big things that came up that are most concerning for private practice owners. Number one is rev per visit. Number two is profit margins. And number three was hiring, how to retain staff. I know this to be very true for many of us. We literally just lost a PTA, a clinician, who was actually, we lost two within the last month, both, you know, getting paid $5-6 an hour more to go to another setting. So lots of pressures. What do we do with this? And really, I think the best use of our time is going to be talking through how you can think through problems like this. So let's start with rev per visit. I wrote quite a bit on this. I actually posted an article in here, and we can start there. So rev per visit, it can be very stressful, especially if you see this going down over time. So I know for our practice a few years ago here, we were at, I think it was like 102 was our average for an entire year. It might have been like 2018, 2019. And we went down to like 99, and it was 97, and it was 95, then it was 92. And some of that is what's going on with insurance companies. So like capitation, or just like we participate with Medicare, so we accept federal payers. And I mean, there's been a fairly large decrease over the last 15 years. I believe that number is 14%, right? Plus throw in the 15% PTA reduction or COTA reduction, depending on what industry you're in. This is a real issue. On the other end of that, to go along with that, even if you're cash-based, there's still a decline in the willingness to pay over time related to inflation. So the dollar's not worth as much today. I know I just saw this in the last 4 years, inflation here in the US is 32.5%. That's a pretty big ding for most people. So we have upward pressure on cost, 32.5% in the last 4 years, downward pressure on revenue. And most of us, as a proxy for our revenue, we're using that revenue per visit, right? And the way that we use it as a proxy in private practice historically is, okay, what's your average dollars per visit? Let's say it's $100 per visit. How many visits are you seeing a week? 200 visits per week. Well, 200, so number of visits per week, 200 in this case, times revenue per visit, which in this case is $100, gives me a proxy of about that my revenue is $20,000 per week. Now, depending on how competent my collections team or my billing company is, I may be over or under that $20,000, but at least gives me a rough estimate of where we're at each week, each month, each quarter, each year. You get the idea. I'll give you something else that we did here recently is in meeting with clinical directors or center managers and private practice owners, I started asking them, show me, and I just did this today as well, show me how you look at metrics. And it's pretty wild. So I don't think I've seen anything consistent. Many of us are just looking at, you know, a sheet of numbers that our EMR spits out, maybe a few reports, and we're trying to make good management decisions from that. Very difficult to do. I know historically I've always looked at, I've preferred to put our vital statistics, so new patients, visits, revenue or income, attendance rate, things like that, that, you know, looking at the overall health of our practice, I want to see those in like a line graph form. So I can take a look at the last 6 weeks or the last 6 months or the last six quarters and see how we're doing over time, that we're growing and expanding and getting better. So rev per visit, It to me, it's almost a secondary metric. However, I know that for many of us, it's a primary metric. And in the article that I shared in here, there I talked about a conversation with four owners. You know, so at an association event, the first owner shares, you know, they were in New York. Their reimbursement per visit, their rev per visit was $60 per visit. Everybody feels bad for them, right? Like if you hear that right away, you feel sorry for that owner. That owner is actually doing pretty well. They have a fairly good practice. They've adapted to the $60 per visit. And I'll share with you here in a second how they did that. The next owner says, well, I'm at $90 a visit, right? Ooh, like that's way better. That's 50% more than $60 a visit. You must be doing better, right, than the $60 visit. And that is not necessarily true. The next owner comes in and says, well, I'm at 120. I'm in the Pacific Northwest. I'm in Oregon, and we get $120 a visit, right? And that's just like, oh my gosh, this is amazing, right? So we can very much get a false sense of the financial health of a practice based on the rate per visit. The fourth owner comes in and says, well, I get $300 a visit. And in that case, you know, they're a cash-based business out of network charging cash for the visit. Now they have other problems of not being busy, not being able to create a demand for their service that matches the willingness to pay that is needed for the $300 per visit. But nonetheless, you get to see like there is a bit of a false floor, a false sense of security. It's a very two-dimensional view to only look at revenue per visit. However, it does give us that proxy. So I think we should treat it as such. I want to talk about two big pitfalls here that we see often. And I'm going to say this. I just had a conversation within the last week with an owner of a large dental practice, friend of a friend. We're out to dinner. And they have quite a few offices. I think they own, it's 17 different logos. I forget how many offices, maybe 30 offices. And the very first, so if you wanted to learn the financial health of their practice, and he was talking about exiting one day and said something along the lines of, like, in dentistry, I want to be able to do what you did in PT, is how he put it. And I was like, okay, so, you know, where are we at? Tell me about the financial health of the practice. Well, first of all, their clinician pay is very high, like 2x, 3x of what it is in my business. I was like, okay, so let's back it up even farther. Let's look at income and expense. How are you doing there? So taking the revenue of your entire practice in a year and looking at cost, do you have an idea of where you're at? I think it was around $2 million per year in terms of earnings was the difference. So income or revenue minus costs and expenses, roughly $2 million a year in profit or margin, whatever verbiage you want to use there. I was like, okay, you know, not bad. What's the revenue? He told me the revenue. And I was like, wow, that's a fairly small percentage of your revenue. So you're running pretty tight, right? Now, if I would have asked, what's your average revenue per visit for dental? Dentists don't think like that. They think in terms of revenue per hour, revenue per week, revenue per year, right? Revenue per month. That's oddly how I think we should be thinking in most other service-based businesses. Like if I'm in a, like an angel investing meeting and I'm, you know, as an investor and I'm listening to somebody pitch, they'll almost never use that like a revenue per visit, right? That's not, it just can give a false sense of the health and stability of the financial health of that organization, of that entity. By the way, if you have any questions, feel free to ask them. I see David Ray on here. I really want to share. David, I still have a sticky note on my desk about sharing bonus for physical therapists, how we incentivize on a monthly basis and go through an actual example. But if you have anything else that you want me to cover, make sure you ask that in the chat. I'll be happy to go through it for you. Getting back to the rev per visit. Number one, I think it might be, it's an important metric that helps with the overall health of the practice, but I don't think it's the primary metric that we're treating it as, right? I would rather know about income and expenses and ultimately the profit margin if I'm looking to gauge financial health of a practice. But nonetheless, most of us do that. The other thing that I see is, you know, along those same lines, when we're talking about costs or our expenses, we tend to think about that as time-based. So we have income minus expense equals profit, or however you, you know, whatever verbiage you want to use. But then when we think about that. That is on a typically a monthly or an annual basis for most of us. But then something about when we get into rev per visit, we lose time, right? So in the example that I gave before with the four owners, the owner that's seeing $60 per visit in New York State, well, they have to see two patients an hour. So they generate $120 per visit, or in a 40-hour work week, roughly $4,800 in revenue. In the Pacific Northwest example, that a therapist could see a one-hour appointment for $120. See 40 of those per week, their revenue would be $4,800 per hour. My guess is they could be around the same costs. Very possible. I don't know the exact numbers of both practices, but very possible. And the 120 is not doing twice as well in terms of profit margin than the $60, right? Because they've adjusted and they just see at a higher rate. So time is very important to include that. There must be some sort of relative to time or time base when we're looking at metrics. So like I could work until I'm blue in the face trying to change rep per visit. And we'll get to talking about what you can do there in a second. Yeah, so like getting back to the cost per time, right? If I were to ask you like your expenses relative to time, you would know what that is. So what are your costs each month? You would have an idea, you would have a ballpark. What are your costs per year? What are your costs per visit? You're probably not going to know that, right? So per month, per year, we know our cost per time period. Most of us don't know, or what's your payroll every other week? You have an idea of what that is, your employment expenses are, but you're not going to know like what that is per visit, right? And it can be almost like trying to catch Jell-O or hold Jell-O if you're going to try to improve the financial health of your practice by only looking at rev per visit. The other thing is, and somebody just asked me this question, it can be very disheartening and beat up the morale of your team if you're trying to control things you can't control, right? Same thing for owners, same thing for center managers, directors, et cetera. And for most of us, and this is what came up on the survey, like if we're talking about how do we get in this situation, it would be very easy to blame the big three. So number one is government, right? Most of us aren't really happy about inflation and we blame it on the Federal Reserve and we somehow think that's part of the government. It's actually a separate thing, but a separate organization entity. But nonetheless, so we blame inflation on the government. We blame, you know, for example, if you're participating with a federal payer and contracted with a federal payer like Medicare, then, you know, we've seen that 14% reduction over the last 15 years. So it can be easy to blame the government. The second thing that we blame is insurance companies, right? They're not helping. They're funneling more and more money to expensive, invasive procedures versus rewarding people that are going to conservative care. The fallacy there that I've talked about, which I've heard many times and some people might agree with, is insurance companies want to save money. Insurance companies in general do not want to save money. They only make more profitability and they have a fiduciary responsibility to their shareholders to increase their profits. The only way that they can legally do that is by increasing their revenue. How do they increase their revenue? They charge higher premiums. How do they charge higher premiums? They have to pay out more. So you and I, as conservative care clinicians, are kind of a threat to that, right? If they can pay out, and this, stay with me here, if they can pay out $114,000 for a spinal fusion or $1,200 for a patient with back pain to come see you, we know that per the research, the long-term outcomes, you're better, right, at the $1,200. However, the insurance company cannot increase their premiums if nobody is getting the 100, if the rate of spinal fusions is going down, rate of injections are going down, and the rate of conservative care options are going up, right? So just think through how that might work and just do nothing more than be aware of the game that you're playing and the rules that people are playing by might be different than what we've talked about or what is assumed to be correct. The other thing, you know, if we are talking about maximizing rev per visit or more likely maximizing profitability, and I know, you know, as an industry right now, we're under 10%, which is a little bit of an issue. So, and the reason that it's an issue is, if you've ever heard me talk about this, Greg Crabtree wrote a book called Simple Numbers, Big Profits. We happened to hire Greg at one time. He's a CPA out of, I believe, Arkansas. And in his book, he wrote, you know, 10% in terms of a profit margin is the new break even, especially for service-based businesses. So we know that anytime a service-based business dips under 10% in terms of profit margin, they're on very thin ice of going out of business. And that's not good. So they're a speed bump away. They're not even another pandemic, but, you know, some sort of financial emergency away, like an insurance company holding money for 30 days or 60 days, which I think just happened for many of us. Right. So, and then if we look at the national average in 2018, the national average for, and I know, happen to know PT because I'm in it, was 14.6% 2018. Today it's under 10%. So that is a problem. So how do we improve our revenue and ultimately profitability? And this is profit, not so you can go get a Learjet or a Lamborghini or whatever it is, but profit so you can keep your doors open and continue to serve people and help people and really create a, let's call it a safety margin for your practice. In his book, Oh, Getting Everything You Can Out of All You've Got, Jay Abraham, in the beginning of the book, I think it's like page 4, page 7, wrote, there are only three ways to grow a business. Number one, you can attract more customers. In our case, that's more new patients, right? So that's the classic, you know, we need more new patients, more new patients, more new patients. We actually discharge people, or however you say that. So we need more patients coming in. And it, you're playing this volume game. Our history in private practice is littered with that thought in various ways, right? So that is one way to solve the problem. The second way is we can increase the plan of care value. Another way to think about that is lifetime patient value. So if we're just simply reactivating people, right? So we see Mary Smith for her back, since I use back pain, I'll stick with back pain. We see her for her back. We see her for, you know, a month. We discharge her. 2 years later, she gets a knee replacement. She needs therapy again. She comes back to us. That's increasing the lifetime value of that patient, right? So now it's just not the $1,200 that we saw Mary for her back. Now we're adding another $800 or $1,200 for her knee. That's one way we can increase plan of care value and patient value. And number three, and I'll talk about more here in a second. And number three, we can increase the frequency of treatment. And to me, that isn't necessarily going from twice a week to three times a week, but it's the frequency at which they can't come back, right? So reactivations are really key here. We can also add in word of mouth referrals and a few other things. Now, when we're trying to solve this, and this is super, oh, wonder if I have that diagram. Oh, I really want that diagram right now. I don't know if I'll be able to find it quick, but the first thing that we want to do whenever we're solving a problem, and I got this from listening to like very good clinicians evaluate other practices. So sorry, very good, competent owners evaluate other practices. And the first thing that they'll do is look, right? So anytime you're trying to solve a business problem, if you're not willing to look, it's going to be tough to solve that problem. And, you know, you can listen, right? So like if we're trying to, and lots of examples on this, but I'll use a parenting one, right? So with one of my sons, I'd asked a question, and it was basically what happened with this money. Like, I know you had this money in this account, where'd the money go? And they told me a story, and it was really compelling. And I was like, okay, that's your story. And I could listen, I could stop there, right? A good manager doesn't do that though. Good parent doesn't do that. And I was like, well, let's just open up the account and see what happened. So we open up the account, and then I was like, well, there's three transactions and you told me there was one, right? So I could have listened to you, or we could look at actually what happens, right? And that's what we want to do in a business. We can get a really good idea of the health of a practice by listening to the owner talk about the practice, right? An owner that knows their numbers inside and out is going to be much more competent and usually have a higher safety of margin than an owner that doesn't know their numbers and isn't really looking at metrics ever, right? So that's pretty self-explanatory. But at the next level, we can take a look at what is really happening. So if an owner says that they're doing well, or frequently if I'm in a meeting, I'll just listen for people saying, this is going well, or this is not going well. And then I'll say, show me, you know, show me what that looks like. So we want to be able to audit. And if you've ever had another clinician work for you, hopefully at some point you're going through their EMR, their notes, and auditing what they're writing in there. So we start, if we're solving a profit margin problem or a revenue problem, we start with something called the profit leak audit. It's a very simple exercise. At our last event in Orlando, Lance Gross with GTS had shared that he did this exercise. He was on stage when he shared this, but he did this exercise. It took him an hour and a half. Lance has a GTS is a pretty large practice. I think they have 17 clinics or so, something like that now, have grown really fast. But he did this exercise and he found, let's call it a mistake, something that was not optimum in those 90 minutes. And he noticed that it was pretty systemic. They corrected it. And his calculation that in 2024, just by that one little 90-minute exercise of actually carving that time out and looking at clinician notes, that non-optimum behavior, when it's corrected, which it is now, is worth $1.3 million to his practice, right? This is a very high leverage activity that never happens if Lance would have went to each individual clinician and listened to what was going on, because he never would have seen it, right? So you have to go in and look at what is going on. The profit leak audit, what you're doing is you're going in at least 60 days ago. Why do we use 60 days? Because you want to be able to see the revenue that has actually come in, right? Not just the revenue you've built out, but what you've actually received in. So we take a look at that and we say, okay, so we built out 4 units to our worst example was it was a Aetna Medicare replacement type product. We got $38.30 back for that visit. Brutal, right? Therapists were floored. And by the way, if you're going to do this, you want your clinicians to be doing this for themselves, right? So we audit at least one day, take a look at it, and just start taking a look at our revenue. That's the first big activity that we do. The second thing that once we get a sense for what our problems are with our revenue, then, and this that goes way beyond metrics, right? We're actually looking at what is happening. We bill out 4 units. What do we actually get back, right? Is there some sort of penalty from the insurance company for, you know, repeated codes or anything like that, right? So we take a look at that. The next thing that we do is we want to plan ahead. So lots of different things. I shared the J. Abraham 3 big buckets of things that we can do. I'm going to give you 4, but there are 4 basic levers that we can pull. Your practice is different than mine, and it's different than anybody else within the breakthrough community here. The only way that you can strategize and ultimately hedge your bet about pulling the lever that is going to work best for you is by using, call it a profit planner. The official name is a pro forma. And it's really something that you should always be using really for the rest of your private practice career. And really your any other thing you do entrepreneurial wise, you should be using this tool. And what it is it's a forecast forward. So I originally learned it from that book, Marshall Layton Turner, Unofficial Guide to Starting a Small Business, I think is what it was called. And I had one put together for my private practice before we opened Madden Gilbert, or Madden PT it was at the time. But it really helped. It did a lot of things for us. One, it helped get Stephanie on the same page with me. Here she was 6 months pregnant. I had just taken a new job as a clinical director somewhere else and it wasn't working out. And, you know, now I was saying, hey, by the way, we're going to take out a $50,000 loan so I can open a private practice. That pro forma, that financial projection really helped get us on the same page. Also helped get me on the same page with the bank and anybody else that was involved with the business. So if you can't make it work on paper, financial forward, income, expense, profit margin, you're never going to make it work in real life. Just as an aside, one of my other sons looking to start a small business, this is the same exact thing that I took him through. So it's just not for physical therapy or chiropractic care or podiatry or dentistry or health. It's not limited to health services. We use it everywhere. And his business is clothing and reselling Air Jordans and Dunks and all that fun stuff. But the, yeah, so we use a pro forma there. I also use it in commercial real estate. When I'm looking at a property, I use a pro forma, a five-year pro forma in that case, to assess the viability of that, you know, the value of that property based on the rents that are coming in, based on the expenses that I'm going to be responsible for. And we use it also to sell the property and to get the bank on the same page with the value of the property. Yeah. So that's the pro forma. Number one was that profit leak audit. We want to be able to look. Number two, we want to be able to plan. That's where we use the profit planner. And number three is we look at the different strategies that are available. We teach this in four big buckets. This is what profitability under pressure is all about, where we have four big buckets of things that we can do. Number one is we can increase our space and personnel utilization. This, I believe, from talking with experts within the industry and also looking at numbers for private practice owners and also looking at my own clinics, it's the easiest arbitrage, right? So if we have a clinician and their schedule is not full, our job in marketing is to fill that up as quickly as possible. Easiest way to do that is with reactivations. We can also use word of mouth referrals, increase that. We can also rely on referrals from physicians or partners, organizations in the community. And then we can also track cold traffic. But number one, we want to fill our clinicians' schedules who are already working for us. And there's lots of margin in that. A very quick example would be today, or in April 11th, right? If you would go back to March, your expenses are already paid. Do you have any capacity to treat at all? Could you have handled 10 more new patients in March? What would that have been worth to your practice? I'm going to help you with quick math as an example. Let's say every new patient who comes through, who you treat, average plan of care value is $1,200. 1,200 times 10 is $12,000. You could have added $12,000 in margin to your practice, profit margin, right? Very simple. You wouldn't have had to pay more money if your clinicians had space, you know, availability within their schedule. And that's an expense that you've already paid for. So it wouldn't cost you much more to serve those people. You've already paid for your rent, your utilities, your billing, everything else, the equipment. So number one is we want to fill our schedules. The second thing that we want to do is we want to fill the space. If we have a 3,000 square foot facility and we only have two clinicians, we want to be able to fill the schedules and then hire that next clinician as soon as possible. And, you know, 3,000 square foot space for us is going to be 300 visits a week. So six full-time clinicians. That's that maximizing space utilization. We call it marketing for profit. The second big bucket of what we can do and strategize with, right? So let's say we're working with a practice and they say, I already have a waiting list, right? There's nothing else we can do. My space is full. I don't want to add an additional location. I don't want to expand an existing space. This is all we're going to have. And I'm not looking to expand right now. How else can we increase our profit? So first, great on you that you're fully utilized. Then we would move to the second thing, and that is increasing lifetime patient value. A couple different ways that we look at that. Number one is, well, the easiest pitfall is to make sure people aren't dropping off their plan of care, right? So lots of things that we can do there. Appointment reminders, scheduling the full plan of care on the first visit, making sure the seven-step exam is in. There's some other things that we can do. We can add a cash-based service, right? Lots of different options now. We've talked about, you know, the Innovus treatment technologies with laser and shockwave and Triton traction. You have New Fit, Run DNA, specialty running, and running assessment. All of those things are all of the additional services. HODS is there as well, but, you know, long-term partner Breakthrough. I'm trying to not leave anybody out. I think I mentioned New Fit already. Yeah, you have all these different options of adding a cash-based service. Right. Some people are doing supplements, small group fitness training, massage, things like that. Right. So somebody is coming in. How else can we serve that patient? That's increasing lifetime patient value. That's one way to do it. The second thing that we can do is we can ask for a word of mouth referral. It's very simple to do. shared this many times, but this is the best way I've ever seen for asking for a word of mouth referral. You wait for a patient win. So Mary is coming in. She says, you know what? Last night was the first night I was able to sleep in 3 years and not wake up with pain in the morning. So you high five Mary. Mary, that's awesome. You've been showing up to your appointments. I can tell you're doing your exercise at home. Great work. I'm so happy for you. That's number one, is you recognize and acknowledge Mary. The second thing you do is you ask Mary, now, who else do you know who has back pain when they're sleeping at night and it's messing up their sleep? It's who do you know? It's not if you know somebody or anything like that, right? Or like, well, you know, Mary, I would consider it an awesome, the best compliment I can receive is when you refer somebody to me. I don't say that. It's who do you know? And then I'd say nothing. And Mary's going to fill that void. And she's going to say, well, my husband, Richard, has been sleeping on the lazy boy recliner for the last 6 years. Right. And so why does he do that? Back pain. Okay. That's number two. Right. So we ask, who do you know? And then we let Mary fill in the blank there. Just practice the awkward silence. It works really well. The third thing that we do is once Mary says Richard, her husband who's sleeping on the recliner, then I ask, what is the best way for us to get Richard the help that he needs? And let Mary solve that problem. Maybe she asks for a card. Maybe she asked, or, you know, she asked for something to give Richard. Maybe she's going to talk with him that night. Or maybe she says, I'm just going to walk out front and schedule an appointment with him, and make him come in, right? Whatever Mary figures out there, we're just there to support her and help her get that person in. But that's another way that we can increase lifetime patient value. We can also do reactivations here, right? So when somebody comes in for a $1,200 plan of care and then they're reactivated and come in for a second $1,200 plan of care, that's a pretty good deal for us long-term, right? It's the main driver. It's more than 50% of our new patients coming through every month are patient reactivations. All right, so a couple different options of what we can do there. Third big bucket, third profit lever, is improving insurance relations. We can drop a low payer or low payers. We can attract more of our higher payers. And the other thing that we can do is we can renegotiate rates. So the really cool thing to see now is, you know, Tony and Melissa Sear shared what they had done and the successes that they had. And now we have other people posting. I know Mike Moravic, Ken McKenzie had posted. Quite a few people now have posted about their wins in terms of renegotiating rates. So that is awesome to see. Again, you can also drop a low payer or you can attract more of a higher payer. I tend to lean towards, you know, how can we attract more of a higher payer? Well, with reactivations, you could go through your EMR, your patient list, and you know who your best payers are. You could reactivate or ask, you know, I would send out something like this. So let me pick on somebody live. So Jack is at the top of my screen. Jack, it's been, you know, and this, I would do this via text or email, maybe handwritten note, depending on where I'm at in the country. But for me here in Central PA, likely going to be a text or an email. Hey, Jack, it's been 6 months since I last saw you for your shoulder pain. Are you back to BJJ yet? Right. So, or something like that, like something very personal, some form of how are you doing? Right. My guess is there's about an 80 to 90% chance Jack responds to me within 24 hours. Then I'm going to ask him, you know, how his shoulder's doing. Is there anything else bothering him? I'm going to have a human to human conversation with him on however he responds to me. Right. Maybe we switch over to phone or whatever, but that is a very easy way to get reactivations from your highest payers. Yeah, right on. Oh, Jack, I hope you're bringing your, well, Fridays are no-gi for us here in Harrisburg. So yeah, all you need is shorts and a rash guard and you're good to go. If you're allowed. All right. So we can do, you know, reactivations and attract more of our better payers that way. We can also do, you know, in asking for referrals, when you're talking with a patient, you can't say, hey, by the way, if Richard, your husband, if he's on a different insurance than you have, don't even bother. You can't do that, right? Same thing with physicians. If you're getting physician referrals and you're relying on that, you can't go to, you know, Dr. Duramo, my family doctor. I can't sit down with him and say, hey, you know what, Dr. D, this type of pack, we lose a ton of money every time you send me one of these patients. Only refer Highmark Blue Shield patients to us. I can't do that, right? The other one that we can is partners. And the way that you can do it with partners, which is very legit, is you can go through your EMR. This is a good exercise. And you can look at patients who are your top payer and scroll over and see who they're employed by. You should have a pretty good list of the top 10 or 20 employers, largest employers in your area that offer really good insurance to their employees. You're not necessarily looking for workers' comp. If that comes along with it, great. But you should know what your top payer is, your top insurance is, and where those people work. And then, you know, typically what we'll do is we'll look to go set up partnerships at those places of employment, and we do it through the employee, right? Who's the HR director? Who's the program director? Can you get me in touch with them? And yeah, I mean, fairly straightforward. We have a lot of training on that. So that would be another way that you can attract more of your highest payer. And then the last thing that we have is really, we'll call it practice math, right? So it's possible. We know from, you know, talking with Kelly Brown and Prediction Health, and Kelly was amazing on the podcast episode, but number one biggest problem we have it as an industry in conservative care is we underbill for our services. And I'll share a story with you here. 2 or 3 weeks ago, this was probably the best resume I'd ever seen. It was a clinician, DPT. They were out for 5 or 6 years. They completed a residency. They completed a fellowship. They had lots of letters, and they were even contributing in the fellowship program. We went out to lunch with Mike Gilbert, my business partner, closely and diligently follows The Who, that Randy Street and Jeff Smart book that I keep sharing. Actually, you can see I have quite a few copies right here to give away in Harrisburg. I just buy a case of them and give them away. But nonetheless, we go through this. So this candidate had already been through the Who interview. We're out to lunch and currently works in a hospital system, is looking to move to central Pennsylvania. And we go back actually to my office right here, and we're sitting not far away from here, and we're talking. And I was like, okay, so we get to a certain point. I was like, you know, typically what does an average plan of care look like for you? And again, this is a DBT residency fellowship working in an outpatient hospital program. And the one thing that he said was that kind of spurned this whole conversation is he said, I know I get paid more than you do. And I was like, what do you mean by that? And he said, well, you know, I know that we're getting over $300 per visit, and that in outpatient PT, like in this setting, it's $100 a visit. I said, you're exactly right. Let's talk about how we're going to solve that puzzle. And so then I said, you know, typically in a standard week, how many visits are you seeing? I think he said 45. And I said, well, okay, how often are you scheduling patients? Is it 1 an hour? He said, no, it's every 45 minutes. I was like, okay, so peak schedule, if you're maxed, you would see about 60 visits a week, and you're at 45. And then he bumped it up to maybe 55 some weeks. But I kind of got the feeling that it was like right around 50. So he wasn't very full, had issues with attendance rate. And then I said, well, I come in for an eval today. I have a $5,000 deductible. What does that look like? What does that conversation look like? And he went into like full role playing. And the way that he said it was, Mr. Madden, you have a very, you know, physical therapy is very expensive. And I was like, oh, this is off to a rough start. But anyhow, I let him finish. And he said, you know, normally I would say for this problem that you have, I would see you twice a week. But because your deductible is so high, we can back it off to once a week. And if you have trouble affording that, we'll go to once every other week. And I just let him finish. He has laser, they don't sell the laser. They give it away for free. And I was like, wow, this is brutal. And I said, so I let him finish. There was more to the conversation, but I said, okay, help me resolve this idea. Why did you go to the undergrad, then he went to DPT school, and he went to one of the best DPT schools in the country? I said, why did you choose to go there? Essentially, he said, some form of, so I'm more valuable in the marketplace. I said, great. So why did you do a residency? So I would be more valuable in the marketplace, so I could help more people and ultimately get a pay bump. Awesome. I got it. Why'd you do the fellowship? Same thing, more valuable in the marketplace. And I was like, I get, so your whole career path, your whole education path was for you to be as valuable as possible to the person in pain standing in front of you. So when it comes time that I'm the person who has a need, you lead with, this is expensive, because that's your viewpoint, right? So if it's $100 or $200 or $300 a visit, whatever it is, right? Like this is like, so when it comes time to shine after all your training, the very first thing you're doing is saying, you're not really that valuable. And like he saw it, and like I thought he would back off pretty good. And he was like, you know, in an outpatient setting, if I'm to make that transition, what's the biggest jump for me? And I said, that, you know, that's it. And I was like, you're gonna be in a spotlight here where we don't have the luxury of relying on, you know, hundreds of physicians that work for the same healthcare or hospital system that we're in. We're completely independent, and it's really up to you to position your value to the patient. And if you don't do that well, they're not going to come back to see you. And like, then we don't have a business, right? We can't pay you. We can't pay the support staff. We can't provide good space. We can't have good equipment. And that's how all this is related, right? So like, there's a lot of stress on your performance. And I have a concern that, you know, you have someone learning to do there. Anyhow, it ended well, but that thought is a little bit of the practice math that we have. So if you have clinicians who are constantly underbilling or underselling services, you need to be able to look at that. We call it compliant coding. Mary DeLong has done a lot of training on us with us for that. And is, you know, whether it's at the virtual summit, at our live events, within the profitability and a pressure course, she's provided a ton of valuable content there for you to help to make sure that you're not leaving money on the table by underbilling. The other one is looking at the scheduling. And the way that we think about scheduling is, are we providing a lot of free care? Which, you know, if somebody's going to cap us at, let's say it's $80 a visit, and that's the maximum reimbursement, and we know that we're going to hit that as soon as we bill 3 units, then it doesn't really make a lot of sense for us to, you know, see a 90-minute appointment or something like that. You get the idea. So as part of the profit leak audit, one of the things that you want to look at is, how often are you giving away free care? How often are you providing 15, 30, 45 minutes of treatment that isn't being reimbursed in any way at all? And that I would put into that practice math type thing. And many practices are finding, we've tested this now for a while, I'm fairly compelled that we're going to be switching over completely, but we've always, well, at least for the last couple of years since the pandemic, scheduled on the hour. We now have tested scheduling on 40 minutes, and that seems to be working a lot better for our practice math than anything else. So I know we went through a lot there. We talked about the profit leak audit. We talked about the profit planner and then the 4 profit levers as well. But that's how I would work through, and that's literally how we're working through right now, solving the revenue per visit problem. A lot of math involved. It's very doable though, especially if you have a good EMR where you can get that back end data. Christine, great question. How many visits are your clinicians seeing for the day? Our standard is 50 per week. We do 3 tens and 2 fives. I mean, it's basically 1.25 an hour. Upper limit would be 60. Lower limit, I mean, anytime we're under 40, we're getting in trouble. And again, with all the revenue per visit talk, here, this is our bar. It's $4,300 per week. in revenue per clinician. Anytime we're underneath that, we're in trouble. So I don't really care how we get there. You know, is it 90 visits a week and we're getting $50 a visit? Or, but that is more important than the visits per week times the revenue per visit. Again, that is just a proxy. If I'm talking with business people that don't necessarily own clinics, that's what they want to talk about, is how much revenue are we generating per week? What are the cost of that? You and I bring that in as clinicians because we think, you know, we think that visits are the number one metric. And I would say they're secondary, really. But I know that's a stretch. But yeah, I think I answered you there. Average reimbursement right now, we're right around 90. So we've been hit pretty hard by PTA and federal payer reductions over the last couple of years. What other questions do you have? Somebody just asked me this, but why do I have this picture? Am I an NBA fan? Not really. But I saw a survey where this shot with Ray Allen was the most iconic shot in the history of the NBA. The story behind it was 2014, Miami Heat, San Antonio Spurs, game 6. San Antonio Spurs are up by 7 with 43 seconds left. And Miami came back on this shot. They were down by 3 with a couple seconds, maybe like 1.2 seconds left. Ray Allen hits this 3-point shot. The other thing is I'm in the photo. So I'm actually in this panel. I'm like right up in that area. So I was at the game. On the way home, and this was like in the early days of Breakthrough. I had known Carl for about a year. We've been doing some online webinars. And I was with one of my mentors, Ernie Davis. And yeah, just one of those lucky lottery life things where I happened to be at the game and this happened. Miami came back, won, and then LeBron got his first championship. But this was the game where they had rolled out the red carpet and rolled out the red velvet rope and the NBA trophy and everything with 43 seconds left. And then Miami came back and ended up winning the series. So yeah, happened to be at that game. I was there with Ernie Davis. On our way home, we were flying back, and Ernie he's now 92, but he was 82 at the time. And he was asking me about, you know, what I was going to do and how I was thinking about life and stuff like that. And at that time I had a couple different options on the table. I had started buying commercial real estate. I think at that time I had about 40,000 square feet under ownership and management. And I said, you know, here's what I'm thinking about doing. We had two clinics at the time. I think I'm actually going to exit private practice PT, and I'm just going to do full-time real estate. And I estimate that if I have like another 20,000 square feet in real estate, that I can just do that the rest of my life. And he grabbed me under my arm. And I thought it was a good answer. Yeah, I was 37 at the time. He grabbed me under my arm and he brought me pretty close. And he was like, you can do that. But he was like, that would be a shame. And it was like very emotional, like that, and the way that he said it to me, but it was also like deeply profound. And he was like, listen, he was like, you have an experience, what you've done in marketing your practice. If you have an opportunity to share that with other people and help them, then you should be thinking about doing that, however you can make that happen. So yeah, pretty cool. That's why I have the picture there, I like the picture, and then just to remind me of that as well. And we just passed our 10-year anniversary here at Breakthrough since the beginning with Carl. Pretty cool stuff. Yeah. What other questions do you have? So we talked a little bit about marketing, talked a lot about finance, talked a little bit about people. Christine asks, how often does each clinic do team building? We do a weekly staff meeting. So every director runs a weekly staff meeting right now, actually, Thursday afternoon. Our statistical week runs Thursday to Wednesday, and we do that just out of ease. Monday's a long treatment day for us. We used to try to do it then, but then we just switched to Thursday through Wednesday and probably have stuck with that now for like 18 years. It's worked out well because we also do half a day Friday. So statistical week is Thursday through Wednesday, and we have that staff meeting every Thursday afternoon. The structure of that is important. Okay. So what you're asking there, just for the staff to get together, hang out, and get to know each other out of the office, we do that organically. And we don't really have like a person leading that charge. Some offices do it better than others. We really leave it up to the director. So, you know, some will go out to lunch or they'll grab coffee in the morning. I mean, it's really up to each director to be doing that, but there's nothing scheduled in or like quoted in or anything like that. There's no standard. I mean, one example is a couple of weeks ago, I went down to our Hershey office for the staff meeting, and they had all walked down to, I think there's a Starbucks or a coffee shop in town there. After lunch, grabbed a coffee. They were all walking back together, talking about that. And then when we got back, or when they got back, we did the staff meeting. Pretty straightforward. And I think they got Debbie, the receptionist, something as well, picked up something for her, and yeah, it all worked out. But yeah, I know we've had like a couple of micro brews in the area. We have some people that, you know, will go out and hang out and have a beer. We have other people that love to run. So there's a group that goes and runs and hikes, and we have a couple of pretty competitive cyclists and mountain bikers as well. We have groups that go and golf together. We have had a couple people from here come to the jiu-jitsu gym with me, or come out to the farm and hang out. So, I mean, there's other structured stuff we do, like a holiday party every year in December. We'll go to, there's a local baseball team here. We'll go to games together, but yeah, nothing structured company-wide that we're saying like every month or every week or every quarter we have to do that. It happens. We also do a lot of fundraisers together as well. Next one is St. Baldrick's Day, where you'll see in May, I'll have my head shaved for, it's a fundraiser for children with cancer. Awesome. Well, we are at time. Hopefully you got something super valuable out of this and I was able to answer some questions for you. The other thing that I wanted to say is, yeah, so we have an upcoming event here at this office. I'm inviting you to my office here in Harrisburg, PA. You will get to meet some of the team here at Madden and Gilbert PT. It's always a great experience. We'll have breakout groups, lots of conversations around improving your revenue per visit, also improving your profitability. We always have some time for hiring built in there as well. We have an awesome guest speaker this time, keynote speaker Gary Houck, really the first mentor I ever had. Gary has built a gigantic roofing company. I think Gary's now like 76, 78 years old, something like that. It was my best friend growing up. It was his father. My best friend passed away 17, 18 years ago now. But yeah, I just had lunch with his father yesterday. Very successful business person. He will be here. The event's going to be awesome. Also on Sunday here as well. So the event is Thursday night, Friday all day, Saturday all day. On Sunday, we're going to have a manual therapy course on the 5-Minute Miracle. It's a 7.5 CU course on manual therapy. It's breakthrough manual therapy. That's going to be great. So if you're in Harrisburg, you can get the most out of your trip here by doing that as well. I know we have quite a few people signed up for that. There are likely links somewhere here in the inside circle. You can always reach out to me here I know some of you will reach out with the direct message if you have a question. If it's something that pertains to everybody, you can just post it and I'll be happy to answer it for everybody as well. But otherwise, thank you for being in the trenches of private practice and for doing all that you do, helping people overcome their health challenges naturally. Thanks a lot, everybody.